This episode of the podcast is brought to you by my YouTube channel. Free yoga is how I got started on my incredible yoga journey, and I want to bring you the same practices and principles that inspired me to begin my practice. On my channel, you'll find workouts and fitness videos, yoga flows, meditations, wellness vlogs, and more. You can click the link in my bio to subscribe to my channel and support me and free online yoga. Welcome to Balance Your Life podcast. My name is Megan Farrell and I am the host of this show. This podcast is designed to inspire and empower you to start and maintain your own wellness journey so you can become the best version of yourself. Let's begin. Welcome back to another episode of Balance Your Life podcast. I am your host, Megan Farrell Gordon. Today, we are talking all about fitness, nutrition, weight management, just living a healthier lifestyle. And I couldn't be more excited because we talk about all the things that I really try to preach and talk about myself when it comes to living a more balanced wellness and healthier lifestyle. Today, I am joined by David Greenwalt. David is a certified wellness coach, fitness expert, and author. He is a husband, father, former police officer, gym owner, competitive state-level bodybuilder, and powerlifter. In 1997, at age 32 and a body weight of 235 pounds, David discovered an evidence-based approach for getting off his own 50 excess pounds and keeping it off for 25 years and counting. Since 1999, through his own company, Leanness Lifestyle University, he has been helping student members from every walk of life get the truth and strategies to lose excess fat for one more time for the last time. On this episode, we talk all about weight management, emotional fitness, and how to live a nutritionally fit lifestyle. We also discuss steps to take to living a healthier, fit life, and so much more. You guys are going to love this episode. You're going to love David. He had so many good tips and tricks in this episode, and I think it will really give you inspiration and motivation to really taking care of yourself and to taking your health into your own hands. So without further ado, please welcome David Greenwalt to the Balance Your Life podcast. I've used red light for years and love it. It's also one of those buzzwords I'm sure you've been hearing a lot of lately, and for good reason. I have both the Kala Red Light Mini and the Kala Therapy Light. I use the therapy lamp during my workouts and yoga flows. It's multitasking at its finest. I set it up in front of my yoga mat and exercise, all while getting the incredible benefits of the therapy lamp. I use the red light in the morning during my breathwork and meditation, even while pregnant. It helps with hair growth, skin health, better sleep, cognitive function, combating anxiety and depression, reducing inflammation, boosting energy, and increasing your libido. I also found out while pregnant, it can help with milk production and reducing the appearance of stretch marks, so I'm all about that. Right now, Kala Red Light is giving all Balance Your Life podcast listeners 10% off site-wide when you use code BALANCEBYMEGAN at checkout. That's 10% off site-wide when you use the code BALANCEBYMEGAN, M-E-G-H-A-N, at checkout. Enjoy! Welcome to the show, David. I'm so excited to have you on.
Thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Can you give our listeners a little bio of who you are and where in the world you are currently joining me from today?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm David Greenwalt. I am in Illinois, central Illinois, since 2013, otherwise northern Illinois, all years prior to that. In my late 50s, I'm a certified health coach and through the American College of Sports Medicine and Well Coach. I've been doing what I do since the late 80s, and I've been doing it online since 1999. So I've been working with people who are mostly interested in the term recomposition, you know, just losing the excess fat while keeping or adding muscle. We try to do both since then. And, you know, I really got my start in fitness very early on. I don't know what it was, but there was something in my DNA where I was just drawn to it. So in the late 80s, I owned a gym when I was a police officer at the same time. And I was helping people at that time in the late 80s. I went on to become an Illinois State Trooper. As soon as I graduated the academy, I started a company that had to do with supplements. I don't sell any supplements now, but that company had to do with supplements and built that into a good size company, a few million dollars a year over several years. And it was while I had that company, I was here when the internet was invented for us all. And we were emailing. That was amazing. We could email. And people were asking me. I had tens of thousands of customers at the time. We had built a good size company with that supplement company. And they were emailing me, "Hey, Dave, can you tell me real quick, you know, real quick, how I can lose 30 pounds and keep it off forever? You know, if you just in the email, just if you could just 3, 4, 5 sentences, no big deal. If you could just give me everything I need to know, you know, that'd be great." And, you know, I tried to do my best to give them what they wanted, but I just, after hundreds of those, I just knew that they were being shorted. And I said, this is not doing them justice. I can't fit what they need to know, at least what I know or what I think they need to know, because I was only 30 at the time, 32, in an email, on the back of a napkin, on a fortune cookie, on a bumper sticker, you know, those kinds of things. And so I had done a bodybuilding show. I'm state level. I haven't competed in 15 years, but I was a state level bodybuilding and bodybuilder and powerlifter. And I had done a show, and it was, as I finished that show, I had gone into it trying to just kind of destroy all the dieting myths on what it takes to get lean, and you can't have this, you can't have that. And I, from a scientific perspective, I went into that show going, why? Why can't you have XYZ or ABC or whatever it was? And I did the show, came in very lean, did my thing, and I wrote an article for my supplement members at the time called "Competition Becomes a Leanness Lifestyle." And it was in that little article where I started to lay the foundation for a book I wrote that I started writing in 1998. And it took about a year to write it and ended up being almost a 500-page book called "The Leanness Lifestyle." I just self-published it, but it's been out in its final edition since 2002. And I started the online coaching program in 1999. And I just said, okay, we've got the internet. It's amazing. There's a two-way communication that had never existed before. You know, if you authored a book, people read your book and they might write you a snail mail letter at some point. But this two-way communication where you could hear from people and they could hear back from you, and you could coach and they could give feedback and you could do things in real time, it had never existed before. So I was a very early adopter of that. We built a website. It was very crude, but we gave nutrition and exercise. And the big thing that I focused on from the beginning, even in my book, was emotional fitness. So we kind of went through all of those transformation, so to speak, in how the program evolved. And, you know, kind of here we are. So we've been online since 99. The program has continued to evolve. We're 23 years online, and I'm 23 years further along myself. And I almost want to hang my head in shame with what I knew when I was 32 or whatever compared to now. But I'm glad that, you know, I had a place to start. And I can't say it with any more sincerity, really. And it really is the same today as it was then. I really wanted to help people get the answer. You know, the answer to how do I get off the excess and keep it off while maintaining or adding muscle? But how do I do this for real in the society and the environment that we're all living in? So that's kind of my background. And here we are.
Perfect. I love it. I have a two-part question for you. And the first part is just because I'm very selfish about wanting to know the answer. What were some of the things that you were doing during your bodybuilding days that were quote unquote, like, not normal? Like, I've never been in the bodybuilding space, so I have no idea, but like, were you eating carbs and that was like, don't eat carbs, like that's not good? Were you eating like three meals of meat? Like, what were some of the things that you were doing that were like, wow, like that's not heard of in the bodybuilding world?
Yeah, just, you know, just to give you a, you know, one thing that comes to mind is, and I didn't eat a lot of this, but there was a sentiment that, and you're just like, where did this come from? But there's this, you know, it just keeps getting passed down, right? From one bodybuilder to the next. And they all go, okay, you know, and then they just do it and they don't question it. Well, that's not how my brain works. I am more evidence-based and I try to question just about everything. And it was like, you can't ever have a piece of bread. If you, you know, if you have a piece of bread, your estrogens are going to go up. I'm like, okay, what? Your estrogens are going to go up. And as a male, you're going to hold on to water. You're going to be smooth. You're going to, and I'm like, I just don't see any data to support none. I'm not saying you eat it by the loaf, you know, when you're getting ready for a show, but to have none, I was like, I don't see any data to support that. Or it was, make sure that you don't ever have, you know, make sure you don't have any carbs whatsoever after noon. Okay, you know, but not okay, you know, and why is that the case? I couldn't find evidence to support these types of things. So I did incorporate a wide variety of foods. It did narrow some as I got a few weeks out, because you're really trying to get things razor sharp, you know, for the stage. And you also get to the point where you're like, I know these things work for me. And when I say work, I mean, you know how you feel when you eat them, and you know how they respond in the body, and you don't notice anything weird and so on. But I didn't narrow it down to what my compadres backstage had said they were doing. And what was interesting is, so as we're backstage, bodybuilders are talking, and they're talking about, you know, how was your plan? How was your 16-week plan? How was this? How was that? And so many of them were just suffering, really suffering. Like, it was miserable. I can't wait to eat, da 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 da, you know? And I'm like, well, I'm not saying it was easy, you know, because you're really dialing it in, things are tight and all that. But I also was like, I just don't have the same experience you do. And I want to say this too, because I make it sound like, you know, I had it all figured out. I certainly didn't. I had done a bodybuilding show 13 years before the one I'm telling you about here, when I was in college. And I did it so dumb. In college, all I could eat was boiled chicken breast and peas in one of those little hot pots in my dorm room. Yeah. I had no money. I had, you know, I just didn't have any money to do it. And I just didn't have a place to cook. And I did it so dumb that I swore, which I broke, thankfully, I swore I would never do another show again. It was so awful, you know? So the show I'm telling you about is kind of me coming into about 30 years of age with more knowledge and so forth. But so yeah, there were a few things that I just really, really questioned. And don't ever do any cardio. You're going to burn up all your muscle. And so I did cardio and
didn't burn up the muscle.
Yeah, no.
It's so funny. I do find being in the health and wellness space, there's some people that are so like rigid, like this is the way it is to do this, to lose this weight or to put on this muscle or to get into a handstand. And I'm like, but everybody is different. Like it doesn't have to be this way. And also there's an aspect of like having joy and doing it from a place of fun, because I feel like that's more sustainable than being absolutely miserable or like hating your life while you're doing things. Like, who wants to keep doing that for the rest of their life? That sounds like a total drag.
Exactly. And, you know, one of the things that I say is, so in years prior, I'm only about 5'10", and I was in powerlifting, and I'd gotten to about 230 pounds. And so I was quite heavy, and I was watching TV one day. And for me, what really changed things for me is I was watching TV and I was on my back on the couch. And you can imagine I'm watching TV out the bottom of my feet, right? So I'm on my back on the couch, kind of laid out pretty supine, pretty flat, mostly watching TV somewhere past my feet. And so I'm looking down my body, and my belly was sticking up so high, it was almost covered my feet. And I thought, this is ridiculous. It's in, I call it a flash, you know, and not a hot flash, obviously, you know, menopausal type thing, but a hot flash in the sense of motivation. And I was just like, okay, that's it. Well, that wasn't it, but it was at least kind of the first, like, okay, time to reel it in. And I go every day now about 185 pounds, and I've been maintaining since I was 32. I'm 57, so about 25 years now I've been maintaining. But at one time I was quite heavy myself, and you know, I had to kind of figure it out and kind of go through those first, you know, incarnations of what the program has developed into. And again, thankfully, it's evolved.
Yeah. One of the things that you had mentioned was emotional fitness, and I have not heard that term before. I would love to know if you can explain a little bit about what it is and how it relates to, let's say, like the nutrition and the exercise side of things.
Absolutely. So when it comes to weight management, I see it in its quote unquote simplest form as a three-legged stool. And one of the legs is nutrition, and I call it we're living a nutritionally fit lifestyle. All right. And the second leg, or another leg, is activity related, and that's an actively fit lifestyle. And then the third leg is an emotionally fit lifestyle. So nutritionally fit lifestyle, actively fit, and emotionally fit. And while this isn't true from a literal sense, I say, just to kind of get the general premise across, that I can tell you pretty much everything you need to know for fitness and health and weight management nutritionally in about an hour. Now, maybe I can't, but that's just to make a point. I can do the same thing when it comes to exercise or activity. I can tell you generally what you need to know for activity and movement and exercise for fitness and health and weight management in about an hour. That's great. That's what most people are thinking of when people say, which is very common, I know what to do, I just need to do it. And that's so common with my clients, and just probably everybody listening that has what I call a weight fighter, someone who's been struggling, you know, to get things in order and to get progress toward their goal. I know what to do, I just need to do it. When they say that, they're referring to those two legs usually. You know, they've heard certain things about nutrition. Or maybe they know, maybe they are really dialed in, knowledge-wise on nutrition. They've heard, or maybe they're really dialed in on the exercise side. And when they say, I know what to do, I just need to do it, they're talking about those mechanical components, you know. And what they're not talking about, and most aren't even considering, is the emotional leg. And anytime the nutrition and exercise legs, or we'll call, if you think of that as a bus, you know, if that bus goes into the ditch, nutrition and an exercise, it went into the ditch because of the emotional fitness leg. Something broke down. There was something that was overwhelming. There was something where the management of life wasn't ideal or best suited to manage the situation in a way that continued to promote the goal of living at or getting to a healthy weight, being more fit, that kind of thing. So it's always the emotional fitness that is so critical. And that's why even in 1999, I included massive sections, and I still continue to spend the most amount of time in my program on emotional fitness, because we get the nutrition and exercise dialed in. It's the emotional fitness that keeps those two running consistently, so that no matter what the day brings, we can make better decisions on the nutrition and exercise side that continue to support the long range vision. So instead of giving in to what it wants, and I refer to it as, you know, kind of the voice of compulsive overeating or whatever, instead of giving in to what it wants in the moment, we're able to go more long term and keep that longer range goal in our mind, which we need to do. So there are all kinds of things that go into emotional fitness, but it's so critical, and it's the hardest part, because of all that goes into it, it's the most important part, and it's the one least talked about.
What are some things that you feel like, or a lot of your clients struggle with when it comes to the emotional fitness side of things? You know, like you were saying, sometimes people are very aware of what they need to do for exercise. They just don't go ahead and do it. Sometimes Yeah. people are even like, hey, I actually eat pretty decently. I just sit on the couch and Netflix all day, or go to my computer and work. And that like my walk is going to the refrigerator and back.
Right.
Is it like accountability? Is it breaking down like limiting beliefs that you can't do it? Like, what would be some of those things that people really, really struggle with when it comes to emotional fitness?
So, great question. And I think the best way to answer it, so that I don't hold anything back from your listeners, from you, and so that I give everything I can, not, it's not everything that I can, because it, you know, that would be, I wish I could just open up my brain and just dump it into the podcast, you know, but for our purposes here, I would say, let me just say the things that specifically go into emotional fitness, as I see it, and there are many more things than this, but I would say the top 10 things are things like focus. Where are we? What are we focusing on? The things we focus on the most tend to grow. We tend to become what we focus on the most. And this isn't a Rhonda Byrne, you know, type of thing where, you know, if I can manifest the parking spot at, you know, at the Best Buy or whatever, I'm not in any way, shape or form saying that, but I do think that the power of focus is really important. And a lot of people focus on what they don't want. A lot of people focus on fear. So my, you know, a tenet that we have just related to that, oversimplified, is focus on what you want, not on what you fear or don't want. And so that's part of it. Gratitude. Where is our gratitude on any given day and any given moment? You know, that's a big one. I call it serenity. Obviously, I didn't make it up. We know it comes from, you know, whether it's religious based or whether it's just tenet based, the aspect of control. And so many people, you know, everybody, I'm raising my hand, wants to control more than we can. And when we do, if we don't get the serenity to understand what we can control and what we can't, and if we don't have the courage to control what we can, and we don't ask for the wisdom to know the difference, then we suffer more. And that's an emotional fitness thing. And when we don't feel we can control something that we are just adamant that we should be able to, that can heighten emotion to a level that feels overwhelming. And when that happens, we're looking for an escape. We're looking for an out. We're looking for something that can help us feel better in the moment. We're looking to change our state, our emotional state, and an old reliable friend I'm throwing in quotes is, you know, ultra processed food. So focus, gratitude, control, serenity, connection, just with people in general, compassion, you know, including self-compassion, self-talk, self-compassion, all kind of falls under the compassion umbrella. Eating real food is an emotional fitness element because it has such an impact on our mental health, our mental state, what kind of mood we're in. Exercise is also not just a physical, you know, thing. It's very much an emotional, mental thing, brain food thing, state of mind, state of being thing. So you've got nutrition and exercise as a part of emotional fitness, sleep. If you're doing everything else right and you've had 5 days of 2 hours of sleep, you're just going to be, you know, in a corner under a laundry basket, sucking your thumb, you know, and we're just a mess if that's the case, if we don't get the sleep. So that's crazy important. Mindfulness, mindfulness meditation, but mindfulness as a whole. And then faith. And I don't necessarily say faith, meaning there's has to be a religious base to it, but just faith in an idea that we have to have humility that we are not going to understand all that was, is, and will be. So I take on a mindset of, because I really am humble in that way, there's no possible way I can understand what appears on face value to be the craziness that is the world and the way things are. I say it's all happening perfectly, even though I don't understand why or why right now. And that just is to acknowledge that I'm just a human. I don't have the capacity to understand everything. So those are just some of the emotional fitness components that we try to help our clients build on. It's not, let me throw all these things at you and we all need to become experts at these things, you know, in the next 2 weeks or at any given time, but it's just in what area might something specifically need shoring up so that you can manage life better. And so that as you become a better life manager, you're making those better nutrition and exercise choices. So those are the emotional fitness components, but we've got, and I'll pause here, but I just want to mention them and you decide, you let me know if you want to go there. We've got, I call it why power over willpower. That's going to be driving, because you were asking about accountability. Accountability is obviously something we offer, but I'm looking at that aspect of why power driving willpower. And then if we have why power and we have emotional fitness that is progressive, the other part that could have it run off the road is the substance use side, the potentially processed food addiction side that can make things seem like nonsense. Like, why is this really intelligent person who has everything else going right and well in their life and is very successful in these other areas of their life, why do they continue to do these things that don't seem to make any sense? So when we look at the why power, when we look at emotional fitness, when we look at the aspect of processed food addiction, all combined, which there's a lot there, right? Then we really start to get a picture of what direction to go, you know, in what way for this person are we best suited to go? Because not every person needs a why if they want to change. That's universal. Every one of us to a degree needs to have emotional fitness components that are reasonably strong. None of us do them perfectly, but not necessarily every one of us needs a substance use disorder, you know, plan. But a lot more people than they think do. That's my take.
No, thank you so much for speaking on that. And it's something that, you know, I've had other people on the podcast come on and talk about different areas of, you know, fitness or nutrition or mental health. And it, like, they all revolve around the same thing. It's like, if you are working out, but you're eating McDonald's every day and you're sleeping like crap, like you're not doing any good for your body. If you're eating really healthy, but, you know, your fitness attributes to walking to the fridge and back, and that's all you ever do, you're not moving the needle forward. It's like, it's all of these things, which I think can sometimes sound overwhelming to people. They're like, oh my God, I have to revamp everything that I'm doing. And it's like, no, no, no. Right. We start super small, but it's,
yes,
you know, you will likely lose the weight and all of that, but there's more to it. You'll feel really good. You'll be clear-headed. You'll be sleeping really well. You'll have more energy. You'll have more focus. Like, it's, a lot of people will want to see the number on the scale go down, and that's fantastic if that's what happens, but there's more to it than just the weight loss. It's like your whole life becomes so much more enjoyable.
Absolutely. And, you know, a really cool thing about it is, just like you said, for each person, we get people that are doing almost all the right fitness things when they come to us. We get a percentage of those. That's not the majority. Okay. The majority of people that struggled along, the majority of my clients have struggled for quite a while. And when I stress, I define them as a weight fighter. A weight fighter to me is someone who has struggled to make significant progress toward their goal for at least a year. Most of my clients have struggled for 10 years or longer, where they may have had some successes, but they're back up. They've never had the go down and stay. And so, you know, obesity is typically a chronic relapsing condition. And my goal is, I can't eliminate the chronic part, meaning that we have to keep working it, you know, get a plan, work the plan, and that's specific for the individual and make sure that it's tuned in for them. But we can avoid the relapse part. It does not have to be that way. That is the norm, chronic relapsing condition. But we are really coming at it from the get-go with, we really do want to get this weight off, the excess, whatever they are wanting to do that gets them in whatever healthier range they want to be, because we don't dictate, hey, you need to be here. You know, we'll give you the guidelines. We'll say a BMI of this is this, and da-da-da, and here's the reason for this, and you probably don't want to have a BMI above 30, and da-da-da, you know, all those things that are, you know, kind of standard advice and guidance. But it's really up to them. They're the ones directing where they want to go. And we just want to help them get there with the mindset from day one that we're going to get there and stay there.
I want to talk about the concept of eating less and exercising more and why that doesn't always work. And I recently listened to a girl on a podcast. She was quite young, And she was talking about she had just had a baby and she was trying to lose all this weight. And she was saying she exercises about 2 to 3 hours a day and she has one meal. And in my head, I'm going, I cannot believe that this girl is promoting this. Like, I mean, she's like, it's working for me. Like, I've lost all this weight very quickly. And I'm like, this is such a dangerous thing to tell people to do. Like, I personally don't feel like it's a smart thing to do, but maybe you can speak a little bit more on why that can be very dangerous, or, you know, just even not the right thing or the right approach to take.
It sounds like she's, you know, with intermittent fasting, that's kind of become, you know, quite popular. I don't have really a negative on it. There are some things to be cautious of. It's not necessarily for everyone. If people have diabetic issues, or if they are pregnant, or they are nursing, or they've got, if they're elderly and they may have balance issues, there's actually some quite specific things that might be contraindicated for intermittent fasting. But generally speaking, I'm not like hard line against it or anything. I look at it as, and the reason I say that is if she's eating one time a day, my guess is that she has at least to some degree bought into, you know, the OMAD, you know, one meal a day, you know. And so what I've seen happen as this, as intermittent fasting has continued to morph, is, let's say a popular version is 16-8, you know, 16 not eating, eat whatever within 8 hours, you know, an 8 hour period, or they go, you know, to a 18-6 or a 24, you know, and then they just keep compressing the window of eating time. Because what happens is, unless we have the why, unless we have the emotional fitness, unless we have the potential for substance use disorder and processed food addiction, unless we have all those things on our radar, compressing the window doesn't solve it, because we find a way. So we've compressed the window to, we're only going to eat during the, because intermittent fasting doesn't really tell you how much to eat. It just tells you when to eat. So if we compress the window to 6 hours, we'll find a way to overeat. If we compress the window to 4 hours, we'll find a way to overeat, because we're not addressing the things that go into our obesogenic environment. What are we really facing? What are we really up against? So we just keep trying to compress the window. If we shorten the window enough, so it sounds like she has compressed the window to one meal a day. And then she's got 23 hours of the day where she's, you know, not eating. And it sounds like, now, I don't know, was she, you know, I think it was Winston Churchill, I'm not sure, but the quote goes something like, no matter how beautiful the strategy, we should occasionally evaluate the results. I don't know how her results were, if she was happy with her weight, if she was, you know, at a, progressing toward a healthy weight, if she was already at a healthy weight. But the aspect of calories in, calories out, I say it this way: calories are king, but they're not the only thing. So there are, it's not, I'm not a fan when people take it too far of, if it fits your macros, meaning just anything, you know, as long as you're eating 1500 calories a day or whatever you're doing to try to lose, you know, some fat, it, no matter what it is, doesn't matter, as long as it's 1500 calories. Yes, we can get the weight off if the calories stay within a particular range. We can. Calories are king, but they're not the only thing. Can she be successful getting to some weight, eating one meal a day, exercising 2 or 3 hours a day? The answer is an unequivocal yes, she can. She can get to whatever. If the calories are right and her exercise is X, her inputs and outputs, that math that I talked about early on, you know, the mechanical side, the laws of physics are what they are, and she will be able to get to whatever. But there's a lot more that goes into it with regard to sustainability. And is she getting the nutrients she needs? And then the messaging to everybody else too. If she's got a following, or if she's got some influence, especially, then that unfortunately puts a message out there, you know, to others that isn't the best. And, you know, I say, again, calories are king, but they're not the only thing. And I say that because some people will be like, the reason you can't lose weight is because of hormones. It has nothing to do with calories. I mean, I've seen massive influencers who write massive books that sell by the millions say it in one line in a 300-page book: calories don't matter, it's all about the hormones. I'm like, holy cow, come on. That is not true. Do hormones influence? Yes. Yes, they do. But ultimately, if you dial in the calories, you'll get to any weight. But that's not the whole story. That's why calories are king, but they're not the only thing. We want to do it so that we do have mental health. We want to do it so we do maintain muscle, we do maintain bone health, so we do maintain or do have a plan that we can sustain. So that isn't, you know, necessarily the answer. But I always say you could find the tallest building in your city. I'll grab a bullhorn. I'll go up to that building. I'll be outside. I'll get on the bullhorn and I'll scream, eat less and exercise more. Calories in, calories out. Scream it. You know how many people are going to change when I scream that? None. It's because they already remember it mechanically. It's the, I know what to do. I just need to do it. There's no person you're going to talk to that doesn't at least understand the concept of I need to take in less than I'm burning to lose weight, fat, you know, depending on how you want to phrase it. So it doesn't help anyone change. So why aren't they changing? Calories in, calories out. The messaging doesn't help people change. They've known it. But since 1970, we went from 15% obese to 43% obese today. So obesity's gone up by 2.5-fold, and people have known all along. There's a math to this. There's a math side to this. There's a mechanical, you know, caloric deficit side to this that has to be there to win, but we're not winning. So what's going on? So it's not calories in, calories out as a messaging for the win. Calories in, calories out at the practical, mechanical, mathematical level. Sure, we just want to throw it on a piece of paper and map it out in Excel. Sure, but in humans, in the real world, in our obesogenic environment, the messaging of calories in, calories out just doesn't work.
Why do you feel like there is such an obesity pandemic? Is it just like we're eating way, way too much when it comes to our meals? You know, people are going back for seconds and thirds. Is it just the fact that our food is just not nutritious? So we have the need to eat 4, 5, 6 meals a day, even if they're quote unquote smaller meals. It's like people are eating just much more consistently. Is it the idea of like, we don't take the time to consume our food, so we're always distracted, which makes us overeat and like we can't process the food and the nutrition we're eating. And, you know, we're all bound to our chairs working away or watching Netflix. Like, why do you feel like there's such a pandemic when it comes to obesity?
The obesogenic environment that we are living in, promoting the proliferation of ultra-processed foods. So the displacement of real food for ultra-processed foods is at the top. Since the dawn of human existence, there's been, and I know you've had guests that have talked about it before, and it's been around, it's not new. You know, the biological drive for calories, you know, is there. It's kept us, you know, alive for eons. It's kept generations going. It's kept our species going. We are driven toward calorie dense. We are driven toward nutrients and calorie dense. It doesn't work so well for us in our modern environment where we have 24/7 access to whatever, but it's still there and it's hardwired in us. We've got, you know, an aspect of habits where certain things just become habits for us or conditioned automated responses where it's like, I don't know, when I come home, as an example, when I come home from work, the first thing I do is go to the fridge, pull it open, and da-da-da-da-da. That's just a conditioned automated response. I come home, go to the fridge, it's a habit, it's conditioned. When I get bad news or when I get a certain thing, I'm conditioned to, the first thing I got to do is turn to this. So we've got those aspects. I wouldn't say those things are really new, you know, as far as like explaining this 15% to 43%, what's going on. But I will say that if you look at the types of foods that we have now compared to what we had, you know, at the start of the 20th century, it's not even close. I mean, again, it's that proliferation of ultra-processed food displacing real food. All the ways that comes in explains greatly what's going on with people so that when people are behaving in a way, remember I said earlier, when people are behaving in a way that just doesn't rationally seem to make any sense, they engage in a behavior that despite negative consequences, they still do it. They, you know, engage in behaviors that cause them harm. They engage in behaviors that socially isolate them. They engage in behaviors that just, they neglect major roles in their life to get their fix. All of these things, you know, from craving to tolerance to withdrawal, are related to ultra-processed foods. So I'll go back to ultra-processed food, the proliferation of ultra-processed food explains greatly what's going on, so that otherwise intelligent, well-intentioned, good people who have plenty of willpower in their life, they have all the things that they would otherwise need to do well if they, again, we still have to do the why, we still have to kind of shore up emotional fitness, but if we don't consider and don't separate out ultra-processed food from real food, we can still sink the ship. And to me, from everything I've seen, read, and working in the trenches every day with people now, you know, 30-some years, 23 years online, that is the single greatest contributor. It's our obesogenic environment that contributes to the consumption of ultra-processed food. And when you look at the messaging that's out there, Megan, when you look at that, when you look at the messaging from most, not all, most dietetic-based, medical-based, it's all things in moderation. It's no distinction when they say the word food. And some will even say, you can't be addicted to food. You can't be addicted to food because we need food to live. And what I'd say is, you have a poor understanding of what food is because you're mixing food, real food, with ultra-processed food. We do need real food to live, and we won't be addicted to it. We don't need Lucky Charms to live, and that's the ultra-processed. And so until the huge influencers, the educationers, it's probably not even a word, the education experts, the government experts, the science experts start separating out real food from ultra-processed, I think we're going to continue to see this trend that we're seeing, because people are just confused and they have the mindset, because it continues to be promoted of all things in moderation. What I say is all things in moderation, including moderation. Moderation can work for a lot of people and for a wider segment than most people realize or appreciate. Moderation in certain narrow areas isn't going to work. So yeah, that's what I would say.
It's so funny because I recently had a former CEO of a multimillion dollar food company on, and he's no longer in the business. And he was, you know, he very openly said on the podcast, I'm even ashamed to say that I had been part of this. And his whole thing was, he's like, I was the guy who was there to make the food addicting. And that's exactly what we did. We make food addicting. That's what we are paid to do. And, you know, he was saying that you can't delude yourself into thinking if you're having a bag of chips, like just because it's made with avocado oil, like it's healthier for you. It's still, he's right. Like, you know, we add flavors to it, seasonings to it to make you not be able to stop eating the bag. That is the whole point of what we do. Like you can't delude yourself into thinking, well, it's made with avocado oil, so it must be good for you. He's like, it's not. Like, don't stop doing that. That's not, yeah, that's not healthy. That's not, it's not real food. And on a flip side too, it's, there's this whole kind of, because I'm in the yoga space, you know, and I've been very open about the fact that I'm not vegan or vegetarian, and I have no problem with people who are that. But I sometimes find in that field too, it's, they almost eat so much over processed food because they don't know how to eat properly whole foods. You know what I mean? Like someone had posted about, and it was like a fake egg or something for vegans. And he was like, look at all the stuff on the back of the label that is contributing, yes, to hormone issues and rises in this, and it's doing this. And he's like, it's not filling you up. That's the problem with some of this meatless or alternative food. It's like, it's just garbage at the end of, yeah, the day. There's no nutritional value at all to any of this. So it's so important that I think we eat whole foods. And that's not to say you don't have the occasional slice of pizza, but like, if we're eating whole foods more often than not, then A, we don't crave that piece of pizza. And B, I also don't feel like we feel bad if we do have it once in a blue moon, because it's, you know, it's life and you're meant to enjoy it and stuff, but you start to crave the more whole food side of things.
Yeah. It's there's a side. And again, if we kind of look at the majority kind of look at it from a dietetics view, from a nutricentric approach. Do you know what I mean by that? Nutricentric. So nutricentric is where they look at the processed food or the food or whatever, based on the nutrients it contains. Or they'll use what I call a reductionist approach, and they'll look at it from just, what's the sugar, salt, and fat? You hear that all the time. It's the combination of sugar, salt, and fat. Well, what I would say is that's reductionist. That's oversimplified. Beyond sugar, salt, and fat, and achieving the bliss point, which is kind of one of the things you're referring to, where these food chemists are really good at what they do, and they create this bliss point within the ultra-processed food they've created. It's the perfect ratio of not only sugar, salt, and fat, but industrial additives for mouthfeel, flavor, and so on and so on. But it's beyond sugar, salt, and fat. It's everything combined. It's the additives. It's everything combined, so that, just like the saying, you know, was, I think it was for Lay's or whatever, bet you can't eat just one. I bet you're right, you know, and they know it. And so what's going on is there is a movement, scientific movement, when I say that, I'm not into just the social movement, but there is a movement scientifically where researchers are more and more and more looking at specifically the impact of ultra-processed foods on mental health, obesity, on and on, it right on down the line. Okay, specifically ultra-processed foods and its impact. And one of the things that I've seen even recently, and I've seen at least a few papers on it, is the researchers were looking at, in the last 40, 50 years, obviously obesity, 43% compared to 15%. Are we eating more calories? Are we just eating more? Is that what's going on? Or if not that, are we just moving less? And or is it a combination of the two? And while there is some argument on exactly what's going on, there's at least a body of evidence out there that has found that we are not eating more calories. And in total, because of our leisure time activity being able to go up because of just our lives and that kind of thing, our activity output isn't even less. Again, does everybody agree on that? No, but there is a body of evidence supporting that. And so what they have found is that the increased intake of ultra-processed foods without a calorie increase in 40 or 50 years has caused weight to go up. And it's looking beyond nutrients. It's looking beyond this nutricentric reductionist approach of, does it provide the right vitamin C and fiber and folate and all this stuff? Are the nutrients solid? Is the protein, carbs, and fats? And beyond that, they are saying that the synthetic chemicals used to produce or that end up as an ingredient on the label don't deserve a safe until proven harmful. And I don't know if a lot of people are aware of it. I suspect not, but I think a lot of people think that our food supply, and I'm going to say our ultra processed food supply, has gone through some rigorous evaluation by the FDA. And that is, I'm not going to say that never is the case, because that would be, again, a broad brush we wouldn't want to say, but in a lot of the cases, the actual processed food manufacturers can themselves run their own in-house research and determine, without having anything approved by the FDA, whether a new industrial additive ingredient is going to be put into that food in which we will consume. And it is basically not considered generally recognized as safe. I'm not saying the FDA gives it that. The FDA just basically says, good enough. You've done your own research. It didn't have to pass through us. Add it in. Unless we find all kinds of harm later, do it. And that's what we're eating. So the ultra-processed foods are creating users instead of consumers, where you go, what are you doing? You know, if you just rationally look at it, we would go, what are you doing? And my clients say it to themselves. What are you doing? You know, why do you keep going back to this whatever it is, you know, whatever their thing is. And it doesn't make any sense until it does. And it starts to make sense when we start looking at it from an addictive substance use disorder kind of thing. But this growing body of evidence really is finding that the processing techniques, so not only what's in the food, but what was done to it, you know, when it finally ended up in the packaging, that processing itself may be just as harmful as too many sugars, salts, and fats. So we're going in that direction. It's a slow roll, you know, to get there. The majority of dietetics isn't saying that. The majority of medical in the mainstream isn't saying it. The majority of massive influencers with millions of followers and millions of purchasers of their books, they're not saying it, but we're moving in that direction. And I haven't found, if you just consider the whole umbrella aspect of an obesogenic environment, I have not found anything that makes more sense than that for why good, decent, smart people who have great reasons to want to get healthier, lose the excess fat, do these things, why they don't. And so we help our clients navigate that craziness, the apparent craziness, and help them go from a feeling of, there's something wrong with me. You know, I'm just broken. Other people seem to be able to do this, at least some, but I can't. Why? What is going on? Why, you know? And when we get them the tools in the emotional toolbox, emotional fitness toolbox, and we get them the tools and strategies to help them really dig deep into their why, and then if needed, again, only if needed, that's why you said it can be overwhelming to people. We don't throw all of this at somebody on day one or day 50 and say, here, use all of it. You need all of it. I don't know. Each person, when we look at them, I like to see where they are. Maybe they haven't gotten off the couch in 10 years. Okay, well, we don't have exercise going. Okay, well, we can move a little bit. Maybe they've eaten nothing but junk 7 days a week for 10 years. Okay, well, we don't flip it on its head and turn into Dave Greenwalt's final 3 weeks of his bodybuilding show. You know, and when someone just first comes to us and says, all right, here's what you're going to do. Like you said, you know, dry chicken breast and broccoli or whatever. No. We like to meet them where they are. We like to educate at a progressive, you know, level without overwhelming, continue to add tools to their toolbox. And I know I don't even know if it's cute or if it's goofy, but I say we're trying to help our clients be lifestyle ninjas. And I only say that so they're just like, no matter what comes at you, you know, it's like, I got it. I've got a tool for that. I've got a mental, not just a hack, but I've got a real philosophy. I've got a real emotional strength. I've got something I can draw on that is essentially universal law, where if we follow it, we do better. And if we don't, we suffer more. You know, like gratitude, for example. You don't have to have gratitude, but if you don't, you're going to suffer more. And that, I consider it universal law at that level, where it's universal, kind of like gravity is, where if there's, again, I have to follow some dogmatic thing on gratitude, but if you do it more, you're going to feel and do better. And if you don't, you're going to suffer more and be more woe's me. So anyway.
No, I love it so much. Before I send people to check you out online and maybe follow along with some of your programs and offerings, are there any wellness or health tips or tricks that you do in your daily life that maybe besides like I eat well and I move my body, anything maybe out of the norm or not common that you think has really made a difference in your life? Like, are you doing a cold shower in the morning? Are you meditating for 20 minutes a day? Are you doing a sauna once a week? Like anything that you feel has really helped you on your health and wellness journey?
I'm a real fan of the fundamentals. You know, the fundamentals work for somebody newer because they're easier to follow and understand. There's usually not a ton of them. And the fundamentals work for the most experienced people because they know what works and they keep going back to these things that work. So I'm real fundamental in that way. So I would say, because it goes hand in hand with emotional mental fitness, that I focus on and I try to get my clients to focus on eating real food, 90% or more of the time. That's like a base, because from that, and I can say that when I didn't do that, when I was in my 30s, I didn't know. I had periods of depression back then, and I haven't for a long time. Not that I don't have ups and downs like everybody does, but I didn't know what was going on. I mean, beautiful wife, life, kids, things going well. And I was just, ugh, and I didn't know what is going on, why. And it was that I was, I call it the Subway diet. You know, it was like, as long as it's low, remember, I've been doing this a while. So in the 90s, it was like, as long as it's low fat, right? So as long as we go to Subway and we get the low fat and we get the pretzels and the diet pop and the what, you know, as long as it's low fat. So I just, not to, you know, belabor this to kind of wrap things up with you, but that I would say is like a foundation fundamental, okay, where just as a base, that nutrition being 90% helps, like you said too, not just from a physical weight management, muscle, fat loss side, but that mental, emotional side. It's so powerful there. And so many people, I tell my clients all the time, if you're going to go to your doctor, psychologist, psychiatrist, and you're wanting to work on your mental health, make sure you don't handicap them by going in hopped up, you know, on ultra processed foods that have your brain just not processing things right. So that's a fundamental for me. I exercise, again, fundamentals, Megan. I exercise 6 days a week. Now, my exercise is usually between 30 and 45 minutes. It's not crazy. It's not a long time, but it's there. And it, again, yeah, like the nutrition, there's a physical side to it. I want to keep the muscle I have. I like the leanness. I like how it makes me feel, but it's a therapy session for me, you know, and not only during, but after, and just how you feel. And again, the mental health and the various, you know, hormones and brain chemicals and so forth that are released from doing it. To me, you know, I say all the time, the physical and the calorie burn of exercise to me isn't even the most important benefit of doing it. So again, I know that sounds boring, but a lot of times the fundamentals kind of are, you know, and then I do really focus on making sure that depending on where my thoughts are going, where's my focus, where's my gratitude, you know, what am I trying to control? How is my connection with other people? And just working, you know, what's my sleep like? And just what are those emotional fitness fundamentals like? How are they doing so that I can just maintain, you know, the consistency? So it's not the most exciting. I've got a son who's using his backyard pool in Texas right now as a cold therapy pool because it's not heated.
I love it.
It's 50 degrees, you know. And he's been getting in and using it for cold therapy. And I get it, you know, the dopamine response and all that. I haven't gone that route yet. I'm not against it. But generally speaking, I feel like there's enough of the fundamentals that people don't do, but I try to do the most of, because we have the most history. We have the most evidence for them. They have withstood the test of time way beyond, you know, our lifetimes and generations back and back and back, to the point where some of these things I do consider just kind of universal law. Mm-hmm. So, and that would be the foundation. So.
No, I love it so much. And I think we talked about earlier, it's sometimes the space can feel very overwhelming. And I think if people just really, really go back to the basics, it's like, move your body, eat really well, make sure you're getting good sleep. I mean, yes, you can throw it. I love the cold plunge and the cold showers, but I mean, do you need to? I like it, but like, go back to your basics, start there. And, you know, it's also a journey. Like, you learn to add things and take away things and try new things out. But I think if you're just focusing on eating as best as you can, as often as you can, move your body, sleep really well, drink enough water. I feel like that's something we didn't talk about, but you know, so many people are just constantly dehydrated. And that, I think, plays a huge part. And, you know, I think people really, from a vanity metric, you exercise, you'll feel good. But it's, you know, we talked about, like, it's that mental health and wellness that I think is like that sneaky thing that makes a huge impact in people's lives.
It does. And, you know, and the really cool thing is, if someone is 30, 50, 60, 80, 150 pounds overweight, a really cool thing about beginning, especially when, again, you're working from that accountability perspective, an educational perspective, where we're really looking at things comprehensively from that obesogenic environment aspect, what's really going on, and, you know, the why, emotional fitness and potential addiction and that, you know, and these kinds of things, and how do we really make it work? They can start to feel better, like really better inside the first pound. Because it's like, even before the scale moves in the first 3 days or whatever it is, if that's their goal, just doing the behaviors better and starting to feel like this is not the same as what I've done in the past. This is not a diet. This is not something that it seems like a quick fix, or this doesn't seem like what I've done in the past. And it's really cool when we can see those positive benefits really early on. You know, we don't have to lose the first 10 pounds to start feeling better. And it just ties in with, you just made me think of it because of what you said. It just ties into the behaviors themselves start to really reinforce that best self that each person has, where you go, I'm really congruent with this best self that I felt I had in me, but just didn't know if I could tap into anymore, you know? And so it's really fun when we can see the positive benefits right away when we start bringing in these elements that aren't overwhelming. Again, I want to take someone who has been eating nothing but pizza for 10 years and say, it's all real food now, you know, but we just progress. And at first, you know, it's like, I remember what you talk about. I remember 20 some years ago, before I was eating real food 90% of the time, reading an article from a woman who had been competing, who ate that way already. And I remember thinking, and she was a figure competitor, I think, or fitness, but I remember thinking when I read it, I was like, man, I'm so impressed with you doing that. And absolutely not for me. I was like, you know, that's where I was. You know, I was like, no way. I mean, I can do it to get ready for a show, but you don't live that way. And I was just wrong. You can evolve. And that's kind of how we look at it with our clients. And our clients, I don't look at my clients and say, you need to get to where I am. That's not it. You know, it's about where they are and where they want to be and just making improvements, never perfection. I always say, we're looking for exceptional for you. You're exceptional, not mine. You're exceptional, not perfection. Exceptional allows room for error and mistakes and correction, but it's still above status quo, you know? But boy, was I wrong. You know, when I was, like I said, I was impressed, you know, when that woman said that, she said that this is how I eat. And I pretty much, and it wasn't a crazy diet. It was just kind of like eating real food, you know, but I was like, that's crazy. So I just want, you know, I'm just saying that, you know, for your listeners or anybody else, I remember feeling that way. That's crazy. And then I just evolved, where now I can't imagine. Now, I know how I feel when I eat that way. I'll be depressed. I'll be a grumpy Gus. I'll be mean-spirited. I'll be, you know, I mean, the things that I'm like, where is this coming from? And now it's just so good. And the other thing too is, now that I know that I am this way eating real food, I would feel like I'm cheating the people in my life if I ate that other way. Earlier, I was ignorant. I didn't know. And it wasn't like I was abusive, but I was just in a bad mood, or I was just depressed or whatever. Not all the time, but, you know, more than my fair share. And now that I know, I just can't imagine.
I feel like I could keep talking to you forever about this topic. David, if people want to check you out online, if they maybe want to join one of your programs or get some coaching from you, where can everybody go and find you?
I'd say the easiest place, just go to lluniversity.com. And it stands for Leanness Lifestyle University, but I know that's a mouthful. You know, you say two N's and two S's. you know, Leanness Lifestyle University. Had I known I was going to do this program for as long as I am, I probably would have given it a different name. But Leanness Lifestyle University, lluniversity.com. And at the bottom of that page, there's links to all the social. We're on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, LinkedIn, Facebook, you know, all the stuff. And so that'd probably be the easiest.
Perfect. Thank you so much for coming on the show and for talking about all of this good stuff. I really appreciate you coming on.
Thank you so much, Megan. Thanks for having me.
If you love this podcast episode, spread the love by sharing this with your friends and family, share it out on social media, and don't forget to give it a 5-star rating and review. From the bottom of my heart, I am so grateful that you are here. Until next time.